Welcome, you're listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast, and my name is Chris Hayton, your host. Just the one episode this week, guys, so you can all relax and feel like Chris hasn't just brain dumped another 3-4 hours worth of content on me in a single week again. Coming to the pointy end of the original series of the podcast, our second last episode to be exact, and speaking of coming towards the end of the season, I'd like to make listeners aware of an event coming up at the end of the month on Friday the 30th of April. For those local to Sydney or willing to make the journey in, we are doing a brewery crawl around Sydney's inner west. So we'll be visiting breweries that have come on the podcast, doing behind the scenes tours, Q&A sessions with owners and head brewers. And you'll also get the chance to network and chat with like-minded people over good beer. I've left a link in the show notes to the Facebook event with all the details for you guys to check out. Moving on to today's episode, I meet up with Director of BSK Projects, Benedict Shakova, to discuss the services and benefits of engaging a project management firm to guide an aspiring brewery owner through the convoluted and intricate nature of a brewery project from the concept design phase right through to commissioning and opening. I thought having Benedict on the podcast at this stage of the series would be a nice way to tie all the episodes, topics, and learnings to date and discuss how this can be applied to the overall project management of your brewery build. Now, BSK Projects are a highly regarded project management firm specializing primarily in hospitality, entertainment, and retail sectors both here in Australia and internationally as well. Benedict discusses the role of a project manager and dives into all the key steps and phases a project like a brewery build goes through and the complexities of each if you were to manage on your own. We also touch on the interior design of a brewery, especially the tap room aspect for patrons, creating a warming and inviting atmosphere and not just a warehouse with milk crates and a bar. A really great listen and a nice way to bring all what we have learned in the podcast to date into the one single episode. So I'll leave you to it then. I hope you enjoy my sit-down chat with Benedict Shakova from BSK Projects. Welcome, Benedict, to the Build Me Brewery podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And the whole point of today's episode and something that I guess I wasn't really considering when I first started out on this project, but it makes complete perfect sense to sort of discuss it. We've had many different segments cover many different areas of what an aspiring brewery owner should be thinking about and considering in, you know, starting their brewery. We've talked about, you know, the licensing and compliance side, the actual concept and model of a brewery. We've talked about brewery layout and, you know, all those sort of things. So basically what this episode is going to focus on is how someone can pull that all together in the form of engaging someone like yourself who specializes in project management for particularly hospitality, entertainment, retail, and also breweries as well, where you can provide services of basically overseeing the entire project, putting their mind at ease, organizing things, organizing contractors, that sort of thing. So today's episode, we're going to talk about, I guess, the insights on what it means to engage a project manager like yourself. You're managing a prolific brewery build right now, which I'm sure you'll get into later. But so we're going to share that with the audience, talk about all the different phases of a brewery project and all the interesting insights that come with it. But before we get into that, Benedict, want to get an understanding of your career background. And, you know, we've talked a bit offline, caught up for a couple of beers and gotten to know each other about, you know, how you came into your passion for craft beer. And so, yeah, tell the audience a bit more about, I guess, how you came to be.
Yeah, thanks for that, Chris. How did I end up doing what I'm doing is, well, I'm an architect by trade, and that's what I started off with is studying architecture, because I always wanted to be involved in projects on a holistic level. And while I was studying architecture, I realized that design is not my strength. That's one thing. And then the other thing is that as an architect, you get involved in quite a lot, but you're not liaising necessarily with like all the stakeholders. And that's what I always want to do. I always want to be involved with like everyone on the project. And so I kind of like came to the conclusion that project managing would be my path. So after I finished architecture, studying architecture, I started working as a site manager for a builder, and did the whole thing like estimating and managing sites and being involved in health safety on site and all these kind of things for a couple of years, which was a really good training ground. I then started working for an English company called Merlin Entertainments, who are very big in the entertainment business. They run Sea Life Aquariums, Madame Tussauds, theme parks, and also hospitality. So that's where I started becoming exposed to hospitality and entertainment. And ever since, and that's about 15 years ago, I reckon, I have been involved in hospitality and entertainment projects. And what I love about these projects is that every single project is different. So every project has its own challenges. Every project has a different outcome, but everyone thrives to have a similar vision. So everyone wants to create something which excites people, and that excites me. So if I finish a project, it's not a residential job, which is locked up and you can't show it to friends, you can't bring friends. Every project I'm involved in with my team, we can actually take our families, we can take friends, and you know, that's a great thing, which I think, yeah, gets me out of bed every day. So yeah, I did a lot of aquariums in my life, and that somehow is a link to, I think, brewing or managing bars and brewery project, because at the end of the day, you pump a liquid from A to B, and the technique behind it is very similar. And I think what I like about these projects is that there's a lot of technique involved. It's not just the architecture, it's not just the interior, but there's a technical component to it. And that what I love a lot about aquariums or doing roller coasters and that sort of stuff. And that's very similar to doing a brewery, because there's so many technical components involved and so many things you learn on every project, which is a great thing, because just as I said before, it just keeps me excited and keeps me interested in what I'm doing. And the other thing is what works quite well is I've got a passion for beer. I'm a beer lover, and I'm originally from Germany, and I've been in Australia for about 10 years now.
And you're a beer lover?
I'm a beer lover.
Oh.
And
what's the chances of someone being German?
Being a beer lover, yeah. But I'll tell you a funny story. So coming from Germany and having our German purity laws, etc., I always thought like we've got the best beer in the world. So that was my starting point. And then when I started working in Australia, right at the start, I actually had a project in Wellington. So I flew to New Zealand quite a bit, and so I ended up in this little brew pub in Wellington. I forgot the name, but they've got a whole different kind of like a whole range of beers on tap. And I was a big lager or pilsner drinker. And so I tried pale ale, and it didn't really hit me at the time. And I was really like, I don't like it. And so I had a chat with the guy behind the bar, and I said, well, I'm from Germany, and you know, we know how to make beer. And he got really offended by it. And I was at the time, I was thinking like, what's this problem? Of course we do the best beer. So anyway, that episode passed, and then fast forward a few years, I was sitting in a bar in Manly with my best mate Ian, and our local pub is the Four Pints. So we're very lucky to have a really great bar in Manly. And over the years in Australia, I came to the point where I couldn't find a good lager, I couldn't find good pilsner, so I got into pale ale. And that kind of like changed my whole perception of beer, because all the different varieties of beer was like just mind-blowing. And at the time, I thought like it's all, you add some stuff to it to make it taste like a pineapple beer or whatever. I didn't know that it's all done by hops.
Mm.
So it got me thinking about beer in general. And anyway, we were sitting together and had this idea. I think like many blokes, I said, wouldn't it be great to have a bar? So that's how it started.
Don't know what you're talking about.
So we started with that and said, oh, let's do that. So we think about, okay, how can we do it? And how can we make it work? And I think that was literally right after Four Pints sold their business. And then we thought like, you know what? Why don't we just do a brewery? We just brew our own beer. We have a bar. We love beer. He's from England. I'm from Germany. What could go wrong? So we said, okay, that's a great idea. So let's start brewing beer. So we started brewing beer, and that's where we just really got into it. And I'm very much interested in the whole, again, technique and science behind it. That got me started. And at that time, I thought, like, I actually want to be involved in building breweries and managing breweries. And the step from doing hospitality, i.e. like bars and restaurants, to brewery is actually not such a big step. And I was lucky enough to actually get into that and have the opportunity to work with a brewery and do a brewery project. Yeah, but that's kind of like what got me there is like, yeah, my love for beer and same for you. And I think everyone who has been on your podcast is that kind of like it all starts with like having a beer with a mate. And
yeah, it doesn't start with having a wine.
No, and you take it from there and then things evolve. And
yeah, perfect. So, well, you've mentioned already your favorite beers. Pilsner, I'm probably
It's not anymore. No, I'm very much a pale ale drinker now, and
right,
I love my hazy IPAs and hazy beers, and more recently I got into the sour beers. So my whole beer world changed from just drinking Pilsner. And when I drink a Pilsner now, it has to be a really good one, and I still think there's not a lot of really good Pilsners brewed in Australia. I think there's a huge potential to widen that market, but from a pale ale point of view, and I think it's great to be in Australia.
Yeah, perfect. Have you been back to Germany recently?
I have not been recently. Now, COVID obviously changed that as well, but I have been a couple of years ago, and Germany is now changing as well. There's more microbreweries starting, not to level where we're here now. I think it's like comparable to where America was like 20 years ago, and then Australia followed probably about 10 years ago with Four Pints being one of the first ones, as far as I know. And I think that's where Germany is at the moment. It's just like another 10, 15 years behind and just slowly starting. But yeah, no, certainly you can see that in Germany, that they kind of like the different kind of beers which you can get these days is just very different to when I left Germany 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell us a bit more about BSK Projects. You're based here in Manly, and I'd love to say it's a nice sunny day, but it's absolutely pissing down rain here at the moment.
And that I don't know. I don't know what happened. Usually it never rains in Manly, but it does today.
Yeah. So how long have you guys been operating for?
So we've been operating. We're going into our fifth year, and we've been lucky to have a consistent base of repetitive clients, which most of them are from my former life, having worked for Merlin Entertainment or Event Cinemas and a few of these companies who still give me work, which is great. And then we just made our name of being an expert in hospitality and entertainment and retail project, actually. So we do a lot. That's the majority. That's our focus. And yeah, so we go into our fifth year. Obviously, last year was a bit of a hit for, I think, for everyone, especially in the construction business or consultancy business in that sector. Was a tough year, and we had to downsize. But the start of this year looks really promising.
Yeah.
And at the moment, we've got all hands on deck, and we're currently recruiting people. And we're looking forward to a much better 2021.
You've mentioned some of the clientele that you work with in industries, but you've also dealt with some breweries here in Sydney, one in particular that you're managing at the moment. Do you want to share some information about that?
Yeah, I can talk about that. I can't talk about the name the brewery at the moment, but yeah, we're currently involved in a brewery project in the Inner West, which is an exciting project, and which like smack bang in the middle of all the other breweries but I'm currently working on a brewery project in the Inner West, which is due to open later this year. It's a brewery combined with a brew pub, which in my observation and experience is what most models at the moment go with, is having a brewery and a tap room, and ideally kind of like a pub associated with the brewery. That is the project where I was, or we were brought in as kind of like a firefighter to help turning things around. Usually we get involved at a very early start of a project, and ideally in the feasibility stage, where we can help with technical advice on whether a site is feasible for a brewery or not. And then we can take the client through all the steps of a project, or we can do certain steps. That's really up to discussion with the client. But yeah, I can't talk too much about that brewery project in particular, other than it's a great project. It had a lot of challenges, but it's on a good way now, and very much looking forward to having our first beer.
Yeah, perfect. So that's aiming to open up later this year, is it?
Correct, yes.
All right, well, I guess we can sort of reveal that when that is a time allowed. But so tell us why, I guess, should an aspiring brewery decide to go down the path of engaging a project management firm?
Yeah, it's what project managers, in that's my view of the world in terms of project management, is, but what a project management company or a project manager can provide is certainty. Is certainty about the outcome of your project. So it can make sure, the project manager can make sure that it will be delivered on time, it will be delivered on budget, and it will be delivered to the specification or quality you agreed. And I think that is the key thing. If I sell my service to clients, and sometimes I get asked this question, is why would I need a project manager? I can manage that myself. You know, I've done a little refurb at home and refurb the kitchen, and I can do a brewery, or I can do a pub or whatever. And yeah, everyone can do it, but it's just like a whole efficiency. You can do things. I can fix my car as well if I've got plenty of time to do the research and do a lot of things. I can probably do a lot of things myself. But certain things I can't do, that's just a given. There's a high chance that I fail in trying to fix my car. And that's the same with projects. I think everyone can somehow manage a project. You can manage your life, you can manage a project. But yeah, that's, I think, what is the benefit a project manager can bring to the project is that certainty. Because I think that's one of the biggest things for every aspiring brewery owner or any other project, is that you just don't do it for fun. You do it because you've got a passion for something, but at the end of the day, it needs to be commercially viable. And if you end up spending too much money on your project and you can't make that investment return, like, it's not going to work. So if you're losing money, then, you know, you can only stay in the game for a certain period till you run out of money. Mm. So you want to make sure that you do it, like, in a way that it's done cost-effective. Usually you want to open projects or finish projects as soon as possible, so you can open the doors to public as soon as possible. When it comes to a hospitality project, there's a slight twist to it, because there's certain times of the year where you don't want to open a bar, because the cost of keeping it open is far bigger than actually what you make by selling beer or food. Which is like, if you open a bar just before Christmas, it's not going to work, because the period between Christmas and end of Jan is not a very busy period. You know, a lot of people are on leave and holidays, etc. And it's just like, it's just a difficult, very difficult time to open a business. And most people avoid that. And there are other times of the year when school holidays. So you want to time that right. So yeah. So it's really about, yeah, making sure like the budget, I think, is kind of the key thing and drive on every project, is making sure it delivers something on budget. So you've got a set budget at the start, and make sure that this budget is not just a set budget which is pulled out of thin air. It's a budget which is based on something which makes sense. So it's not about just a budget, it's about having a realistic budget. And that's where a project manager can help as well, in just helping with an initial cost estimate or cost plan, and just saying, okay, based on my experience with similar projects, made based on a square meter rate or based on other things, can actually give you an indication of that's approximately what it's going to cost you. And then the project manager can give you an idea of like how much in percentage you would pay on consultant fees, etc. So they can help you in just, yeah, getting a realistic budget set up. And at that point, it gives the client, you know, a point where you can make a decision. Is it, yeah, do I still want to proceed with it? Or is it something which I might want to change my scope and maybe start smaller? And then as soon as I make some money, and then, you know, just extend my business. And
Okay. So what would you say are the common pitfalls or mistakes you tend to come across with breweries wishing to do it on their own? Or you've mentioned to me over a beer about particular clients try to do it on their own, and then you come in at a later point, you know, like you said, being that firefighter, cleaning things up, putting fires out. Talk to us about what are some of the common pitfalls or mistakes you come across.
There's a couple of most common pitfalls which I've identified, which is usually is having an unrealistic budget, which is a key thing. Usually people freak out when they realize when the first quotes are coming in or something, and say, oh shit, this is much more than what I thought. That is one of the probably the most common pitfall on every project, is not having a realistic budget. and not having a contingency. Because as much as you plan things out, you will always come across some things which you just didn't know. And that's a normal thing that happens on every project. But the point is that you have got enough money in your back pocket to cater for those things. And so budget is a big one. And then it's just underestimating how much time it takes to run a project. So when we run a project, it depends on the phase of a project and the complexity of the project. But generally speaking, it's probably about something between, and it's just really broadly speaking now, 1 to 2 days, man days across the duration of the project. And there will be times in the project where it's much more, which is the start of the project and you just before you submit your DA, or when you prepare your tender documents, you go out to tender, and there are certain times where you spend 5 days a week on the project. And then at times you spend only half a day and a day. But on average, I would say it's 1.5 to 2 days a week on project. And what people realize is once they start doing it, if you spend 4 days or 5 days on managing a project, and that's for us being professional project managers. So I would assume we're a bit more time efficient in managing a project than, I don't know,
the average Joe.
The average Joe would be. Yeah. So that's the thing. So in managing the project is only one part of opening a brewery. And as you've experienced through your podcast, there's so many components to a project which all need to be managed. And for example, we wouldn't manage, like, I don't know, your quality control and your health and safety procedures and policies is something we wouldn't manage, but it needs to be managed by someone. And you as the owner are responsible for doing it. So that needs to happen in parallel. So by the time we hand over the project, you want to open the doors. So by that time, you need to have staff. That staff would need to have been trained. You would need to have ordered, if you've got a brew pub and let's say you've got a kitchen, like you hire a chef, you do all you prepare your menus, you do tastings and all that sort of stuff. You need to order all your material. You need to deal with so many different things which don't give you enough time to manage the project. So, and that's the other big thing, is just underestimating what it takes actually to manage a project. And that's where a project manager comes in handy, because that's what they do for a living, just managing projects.
Mm. When we caught up for a beer and you sort of talked about all the key phases of a brewery project, are you able to, I guess, share with the audience today as to what those phases are?
Yes. And again, it's broadly spoken, in my view, about five phases, and you can break it down in as many little phases as you want. But there's an initiation phase where you start with an idea, and that's where you have a beer with your mates. Say, I want to have a brewery. Cool. Okay. And the next step is, okay, how big do I want to be? Do I want to have a brew pub with it? Do I want to have a restaurant with it? Or it might be, where do I want to have it? Or so all these things, like, you start off with. But anyway, you reach a point where you've got a bit of an idea of what you want to do. The next thing everyone will start asking is, okay, how much is it going to cost me and when can I open it? So, and then you start thinking about, okay, how do I come to get to the next step? So where, if you've got a project manager involved, that would help you to create like kind of like a concept brief or a project brief, which would kind of like summarize what you want to achieve. That would give you advice of who you'd like to get involved at an early stage. And Ben from CPS spoke about it from a planning perspective, for example, how important it is to actually make sure before you sign a lease for a building to make sure that from a planning perspective, a brewery will work. And whilst a brewery might work, does a bar work as well? And that's not always the case. So that's a planning thing. Where a project manager can come in is help with, like, do a technical due diligence. Do I have enough space? Can I actually fit all my tanks in? Do I have any restrictions of getting the tanks in? Is there, like, maybe, I don't know, a very narrow road to the side, or is there like a very low bridge, or all these kind of things? And that's just simple examples, but also a project manager would look at, and sometimes with the help of other consultants due to the complexity of the project, but how does it look like in terms of my fire services? Is there a good chance that I have to upgrade my fire services? It could be a costly exercise. How does my electric look like? Like, if you've got a, I don't know, 20-year-old main switchboard, there's a good chance you have to upgrade because it's not compliant with current standards anymore. Power in general, do I have enough power? That's a key thing, is that does my site have enough power to actually allow me to brew beer whilst running a kitchen, whilst running a bar, whilst doing all these other stuff? So that's kind of the initial phase. In the initial phase, you would also start putting a budget together and a program together. So once that is all done, and then you sit down and you say, okay, we know what we want. It's roughly that budget. It's roughly that program. You take it off and say, yeah, that's still feasible for me. Let's move into the next phase. And in that phase, you would go into the design phase and you would spend more time on developing your brief a bit further. And that's where, again, where a project manager can help you just develop that brief a bit further so that consultants have a clear brief of what they have to do. That's another pitfall is like if you do brewery on yourself or by yourself, you work a lot with mates and that's all fair and good. But if your mate is not briefed on what you want, to all his best intention, he's trying to do what he thinks is right, but it might not be exactly what you want. So quite often there are scope gaps and these scope gaps might cost you money or might cost you time. So that's where briefing on every project is a really important thing so that everyone is very clear about what we want to achieve. So you then go into the next phase. Okay, who is the right team? How do I find the right architect? How do I find the right service engineer? And whom do I need? On some projects, you might need an electrical engineer. On some projects, you might not need an electrical engineer. On some projects, you might need a town planner and somewhat. So that's where a project manager, again, can come in handy and just help you and give advice on whom you need in general. But also, if you've got a project manager who is specialized in a certain sector, most likely he will know who are the best in that field for your particular project. So he's got a network he can draw on and just help you get these consultants on board, negotiate the fees, prepare the contract, and manage these consultants. You then do that design phase and you prepare a design. And if you need a development application, you would start with your concept design and prepare a development application. You lodge that with council. At the same time, we then continue with the design and just develop the design further, bring it to a point where you can either tender it, or at that point you can still might want to say, I handle it myself and I've got a mate who can build it for me. But you just bring it to a point where you can actually procure the next kind of stage, the next services. And that's where you've got different options and there's pros and cons to every model. And it's probably worth just running you through some of the most common models in construction. There's a model which is called ECI, which is called Early Contractor Involvement, where basically you get a contractor on board, you pay them a fee, and they give you advice. They give you some construction advice. And that might be handy if you've got a site which is a bit tricky and you just want to find out, okay, what's feasible, what can I do? So that's where a contractor would get some of their subcontractors in and would help you to understand maybe structural implications. Okay, how much is it going to cost me to take down that wall and put a steel beam in instead, etc. So that's an early contractor involvement where you just pay a fee to a contractor to help you figuring out some stuff. From that on, you've got different options. And that's the stage you don't have to do it. It's just a way to do it. I don't use it very often. I think if you've got the right consultants on board, you can skip that phase. But then you can engage someone on a fixed price lump sum model, which gives you probably the most certainty on your outcome in terms of budget. What it requires, though, is like 100% developed design. So you would need to fully document what you want. And you might not always want that. You might want to have a bit of flexibility in your design, in which case you might want to go with a DNC, which is designed and construct model, where you develop a design to a certain level. And quite often we just say 60% design is developed, which is generally like, your concept is developed with a bit more information, allowing a contractor to price the works and provide a fee to bring that design from 60% to 100% with a fixed price lump sum again. That usually comes in a bit more expensive than a fixed price lump sum because the contractor takes over more risk. So they would price in a contingency for their risk. But again, it gives you the certainty of, okay, this is what's going to cost. And that's always like assuming you don't change your mind. So yeah. That's another thing which happens so often on projects, and that costs the most money on projects is spent. Unexpected money is spent on situations where clients change their mind, which on paper might not sound like a big change, but the implications on site to change something when it's half built, that's easy because you understand, okay, I have to knock it back and then just rebuild it. But if it's not built yet, but you stop something like a certain design request or change request might stop the contract on site because they can't continue with something because they need a decision on the other thing first. So the whole project on site comes to a stop, and every week the contractor is finishing later. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you prelims for the site manager, et cetera, et cetera. So it's design changes is a big thing on contracts. You can go with construction management models or kind of a cost plus model where you pick a builder, you pay them a fixed fee for their services and maybe or an hourly rate for their services, and they would then procure all the trades, different trades are required, and would do it on an open book basis with you, would show you, I've got three electrical quotes for electrical. We recommend with going with contractor B, which might be the most cost effective, but might also not be the most cost effective. But there might be other reasons why the contractor is saying, let's go with contractor B because we know the quality is better or he's faster or whatever. So you can do that. And then you pay a margin on top of every trade. It's a way to go. It's not very common in the hospitality and commercial sector. Again, because most commercial clients, our commercial clients, want to have a cost certainty. So, and that's a model which doesn't give you a lot of cost certainty, very flexible. Or you could also go on and manage it yourself. You procure every trade yourself. You could say, okay, I go out for an electrician, I go out for a plumber, I go out for a carpenter, I go out for whatever. You can do that as well. Again, it needs someone then to manage that full time. So whether you want to do it and you've got the time to do it, is a different question. But it's certainly an option. Or the other option is you're just a tradie and you just do it yourself. You're just very, you're a handyman and you just do it yourself. Again, it's always like there's different reasons why to go with different contract models. And that's, again, where a project manager would sit down with you, would look at like, okay, what is your capability or what do you want to achieve? And would just give some guidance and advice of what might be the best procurement model. And you would just agree with you and discuss it and would outlay the pros and cons of every model. And then, you would come to an agreement and the project manager would manage it for you. At that time, it's also important that, like, how do you get a contractor on board? And regardless of what model you go with, you want to make sure that your contract is kind of watertight. Again, it's coming down to that briefing, which I spoke about earlier. It's just making sure that it's fully clear to everyone what is expected and that is reflected in the price. The worst thing is that you think something is included in the contract because you spoke about it once, maybe, or whatever. But for the contractor, it's not included. And worse comes to worse, you disagree on something and you look into your contract and it's not covered. And that's what you want to avoid. You want to make sure if you get people on board to have a really good contract. And that's in the interest of the contractor as well. It's not trying to screw a contractor. It's like in the interest of both parties to have a crystal clear contract with the scope clearly defined, okay, how much money do I pay you for certain things? Because then reality is you don't need to pull out the contract. You only pull out a contract when you argue about things. And ideally, you don't want to do that. And we don't do it very often to pull out the contract. But it's all about like making sure that the scope is clearly defined and it's kind of captured in the contract. That's a really important part in that phase. Yeah, and then you've got the contracts signed and sorted. You shake hands, you have a beer, and you celebrate and start on site. And then more things start and different things start and your focus shifts suddenly from like a lot of like in theory and looking at drawings to, okay, what's happening on site. And again, there's different challenges once you start on site. And depending on which model you go with, there's different challenges. And I come to that in a moment. But when you do a brewery, chances are that you are in a warehouse and in some form of industrial area, which is nice because then construction is an easy thing. You don't annoy neighbors, and it's a straightforward thing. But if you end up like in somewhere in CBD and you find a great spot, like I don't know, Four Pines in Manly is a good example. They're literally their pub or their first brewery, the microbrewery they had, was actually within a residential building. So building something within a residential building is a challenge in itself because you are very restricted on when you can work and how much noise you can make. So these things you want to take into consideration. So you would usually have kind of like a kickoff meeting and just discuss all of that. And you would just outlay, okay, what are my house rules? How do we work together on site? Sometimes you lease a warehouse and that's also your head office. And you're already in that warehouse and you're operating out of that warehouse because that's your office. So how does it work with like, it's a construction site at the same time? If you've got a general contractor on site, they take the site over. They're responsible for everything that's happening on site. And you just can't walk on the site and say, I just want to go to my office. So you need to figure that out. So if the office is in kind of like an isolated area, that might work. If it's not, then how do I get onto site? You know, there's so many restrictions in Australia, or not in Australia, generally, just to make sure that everyone is safe. So there's a lot of things you need to consider when working and on site. And that's the other thing. If you do some of the things yourself or all of the things yourself, is how do you manage safety on site? Where a lot of different trades work together and on top of each other, there's a high risk that something doesn't go right. If you're not skilled in managing a site and health and safety on site, then I personally would not take the risk. That's why a general contractor might come in handy, because they have a full-time site manager on site, which manages all of that for you. So that's a service which we don't do. We don't do site management. We provide site supervision and work with the contractor and make sure that everything happens on time and to the quality. And we do health safety checks as well. But it's the primary responsibility of the builder to make sure the site is safe. But they manage all of that. And that's important as well, because on a brewery project is there will be a lot of different contractors working. And you also have contractors which are not engaged by the general contractor. So your tanks, for example, which you purchase overseas, and a lot of them come out of China, they will be delivered to site, usually not by the general contractor. So you get someone to actually bring them onto site and install them. The plumbing, again, might be something the general contractor does, but the tanks, the positioning of the tanks and all that is a different contractor. So you want to make sure that that is kind of managed and it's staged the right way. If that tank goes into an area which is later on, like, I don't know, there's a wall put in place which prevents you from getting the tank, and you want to make sure the tank is in before the wall is built. Yeah, so these kind of things is like, there's a lot of things to be considered on site. That's why a general contractor usually is quite helpful to help manage you all of these things. Or your keg washing machine and your canning line and all these different things, you know, they all need to be managed and they all need to be put together. And there need to be someone on site who pulls all these strings and keeps an overview of what's happening on site. So, yeah, that's all happening on site. Then the other thing is again, where as a client, you probably have a great interest in that. And that's where a big part of usually of our job is that quality control, just making sure the works on site are in accordance with the agreed design and to an agreed quality. And we do defect controls and defect inspections and just go to site and just pick up defect, discuss it with the builder, and just make sure that these get picked up along the way. Because reality is, on all projects, you kind of like run out of time at the end and everything happens at the end. So you do your commissioning, you do your staff training, you need to get all council approvals, you sign off the contractor. So all these things happen at the end. The last thing you want to do is dealing with defects. So it might be that your sound system is not properly working, or suddenly the bar is not working, the bar taps are not working, the beer taps are not working, or you've got issues with lighting, or the wallpaper is peeling off, and all these things are kind of like annoying when you come. You literally, you want to open tomorrow and suddenly all these things happen. So what we do, we've got a 30, 60, 90% methodology. So we come to site anyway on every week and have a site walk and see what's happening. And we've got regular site meetings and all of that. But we've got particular times in the project where we go on site at 30% completion, 60 and 90, where we just do a formal defects walk and start creating a defects register. And most builders like it, because it gives them like a chance to just do these things well ahead of time. Because for a contractor, there's no interest in dealing with defects 2-3 weeks after they hand it over. Because the way they price a project is like for the duration of the job, and then it's handed over, and then the site manager moves on to the next job. If they end up having so many defects that the site manager has to spend the next 3 weeks on site, it's nothing they've accounted for. So they're interested in that as well. So contractors do want to hand over defect-free. But in my view, handing over defect-free is always like a team effort. So it needs everyone involved and just being open about it. You have your construction and a touch base on commissioning and handover. But your handover phase is kind of like the last phase. And that's a very, very important phase for a number of reasons. You start commissioning all the systems. And you want to do that well ahead of time to just figure out if there's any defect. Because if like technically, like your whole brewery setup works, you cannot visually see. You need to commission it. You need to train on it and you see if it's working. So your commissioning is important. You need to train your staff on a fully commissioned kitchen, for example. So you want to get people in for at least a week before you open to just be familiar with the site and just start, you know, where's what, where do I find my plate and all these kind of things. And the other thing is like you come to a phase where the builder comes to you and says, okay, we've completed the works. We want to hand it over. And that is a very important phase because suddenly the responsibility changes from the builder having to prove that it's not his fault if there's a defect to suddenly you proving to the builder that that was something he's responsible for. So everything you pick up before handover, which is not in accordance with the design, is usually listed in a defects register. If it's not listed in there and it happens afterwards, then it might not suddenly not be a responsibility of the builder. The builder has usually like a period of 12 months, which is called the DLP, the defect liability period, where he's responsible for any defects to fix. But where there is, for example, if you're not happy, for example, the way, let's pick wallpaper as an example again, like the wallpaper is not put up straight or whatever. If you accept that at handover, that's it. You can't come 5 days later and say, hang on, no, that actually doesn't look right. If you got a very nice builder, I might say, I'll fix it, but chances probably not because his trade would be offside. So that's again, like in that final phase, it's important you have someone who can focus on all these things and just pick up these things and just make sure that everything is just documented, because then you're just in a good position. And it's good for both sides. It's good for the builder. It's good for yourself. You're just very clear on, has it been delivered in accordance with what we agreed? And if not, okay, now it's time to fix it. Let's fix it. Yeah. But after you hand it over, it's just hard. It's hard to get the builder back. Usually a very painful process if you've got serious issues. If you've got, I don't know, for example, if you've got an air conditioning system and it hasn't been fully commissioned before and hasn't been fully tested, the moment you open the doors, usually what happens if you haven't done that before, it's like Murphy's Law. 3 days later, it just shuts down, or it's faulty, it's too hot, too cold, or whatever. For a builder to come in and fix it at that time is hard because you usually have to come in out of hours because you don't want to shut down your business just because something is not working properly because you want to make money.
Mm.
For the builder to come in doing it at night costs him more money. So he's not really interested in coming in at night. So you start these kind of battles, and it's really like getting a builder back on site to fix it. It's not always an easy thing. So that's why, again, it's in the interest of all parties, just like test everything before, just make sure it works and then open the doors and everyone is happy. So yeah, and then there's some legal implication at the end as well. You've got your development application. Obviously, you had it at the start and you kind of missed that step a bit. But I think Ben touched on that as well in his episode. But you get your development application and then you need your construction certificate, which will tell you, which will confirm that your drawings are in accordance with Australian standards and the development application. So the certifier will come to site. They have to do a mandatory site inspection at the start, and they will do at least one at the end. So they will come through again and just certify everything. They will tick off on everything. And if they're not happy with something, you might not get your occupation certificate, which would allow you to operate the business. Without the occupation certificate, you cannot open your business. So sometimes you get a temporary occupation certificate, which allows you to operate with still a few defects to be resolved, but these would be minor defects. But if there's anything major, and especially if there's anything related to safety or fire, you're very likely not going to get your occupation certificate, which again is a big thing. And that's why you want to be proactive in defecting these works and get people through and have your service engineer, for example, who's responsible for the design, be on board as well and do an inspection at the end, just to make sure that everything has been built, because then the chances are the certifier comes through, happy days, just signs it off and open the doors.
Mm.
Yeah, so that is handed over, and then you want the builder to hand over O&M manuals. Like they want to give you, or some people call it handover documents, with all the warranties and all the spec sheets and everything included. So it's something you want because again, picking air conditioning as an example, how do I switch it on? How do I turn it off? You know, where's my control panel located? And all these kind of things would be included in that. As built drawings, like especially if the builder was engaged as a design and construct builder, they would have developed the concept design further. So you want to have a set of as built drawings, which is important for if you do future changes. You just like to know where's your main switchboard, where are your subboards, certain valves and certain things. So it's just good to have a decent set of handover documents. And that's where usually project managers assist as well in just compiling it. And at least we do it, because builders do it in a very different way. And for me or and my team coming most of out of an operational background, we just know what is important for clients and how it is set up. So yeah, we just compile and just make sure it's all properly documented and you've got a hard copy inside, you've got a soft copy. Sometimes, and that's depending on the complexity of the job, you might want to train staff on certain things. Like, let's pick air conditioning again. If it's a very complicated system, you might want to get some staff training done with the contractor on certain things. Yeah, but it's all project depending. But yeah, that's usually kind of the last thing of the project, apart from signing the final invoice. And that's probably the other thing we skipped, or I skipped the whole contract administration during the course of the project, is you will get a number of invoices during a project from consultants and from builders for certain works they've done. And we then check if these works actually have been delivered. Can I actually release that money? Because once that money is gone, it's gone. These days, and I think it's in place for about 20 years now, there's a Security and Payment Act in place, which makes sure that contractors will be paid on time. And it's a good thing because it just protects contractors from clients just not paying because they're just not happy with something. But what it does, it comes with certain requirements. So you get a claim submitted under the Security of Payment Act, and you usually have 10 business days. Usually you have 10 business days to respond in case you're not happy with the amount claimed. If you're on the 11th day, then your contractor is entitled to the full amount. So if you're too busy opening your brewery and you miss that 10-day window, but you're not happy and you did not intend to pay the full amount because something wasn't delivered or wasn't done right, or you're in a dispute with the contractor, you only got these 10 days. After that, they're entitled to be paid and you have to pay it. And the only way to get that money back is take the contractor to court, which you don't want to do anyways, but just the worst case scenario. So there's certain obligations. The same like is for consultants in the construction business. They can claim under the Security of Payment Act as well. And again, same obligations. So you've got 10 days to come back with any issues you might have. And you need to outlay it in a certain way. You need to issue what is called like a payment schedule. And in a payment schedule, you define exactly why you're reducing amount by what. Once you've done that, you can't come back a week later and add something to it. So you want to make sure the first time you get it right, you can't change the numbers again. So yeah, and then after that 10 days, you've got another 5 days to pay it. So in total, you've got 15 business days to pay your builder or to pay your consultants if they claim under the Security Payment Act. So you want to make sure you don't miss these deadlines. Usually on a project, everything goes well and there's no argument and you pay what's been requested. But every now and then it happens that you don't want to pay the full amount, and then you want to make sure you do it the right way. You just cannot pay an invoice. You have to respond to it in a certain way. So I think that's kind of like in a nutshell what a project is.
It's a big ass nutshell, isn't it?
it's a lot going on, but I think it kind of like gives an idea of why a lot of commercial clients use project managers. It's just there's a lot of work, and again, we do that for a living, and that's what we deal with, and we just know certain things happen at a certain time and what we need to do by when, and we know exactly what kind of milestones need to be complied with and what's happening as a newbie to the whole thing, and we might be restricted on money. But usually it just pays off to get the right people on board and to get the right advice. Mm-hmm.
Well, leading into, I guess, some of the commercial costs or what it might cost an aspiring brewery owner to engage project manager like yourself or anyone with experience in that field. It's an expensive business to open a brewery. Many people listening are going to be working from very tight budgets. It's been spoken about quite a lot on this show about all the different costs involved. It's not something you can just set up overnight. So is engaging a project management firm like BSK something within the reach of someone just, starting a 500-litre or 1,000-litre brew pub?
Yeah, well, I think it is, especially if you look at like what you get in return. And typically the way most consultants price their services. It's a time-based service. So we look at like, okay, how much time do I spend on this project? And how much time, for example, I have a senior person spending on this project, and how much time I've got a more junior person for like a lot of the administrative stuff, et cetera. So, and that's the way how we do it. We just look at that. Okay, what resources do we need on a project? How long is the project? And how much time do we think we spend on the project? And then we just apply our day rates to it, and that spits out a fee at the end. And then we just look at that in relation to the overall budget. And typically, and that's, again, it's just hard to say because it really depends on the project. But like a straightforward normal project, your fee might be sitting something at, I don't know, 1.5%, 2%-ish. But then you might have projects where it goes up to maybe 7-8%. But that are like, that is just in comparison to really small budget. If you work on a $100,000 project or $1 million project, the amount of work I put into certain things, for example, preparing tender documents, is similar to what I do on both projects. So there's not a big difference necessarily. So the management steps and the procedures are very similar. And advising the client on a $100,000 project, which you do as well, they are interested and they've got the same questions, the same concerns as someone working with a $1 million project. So you spend a similar amount of time. So that's why your percentage on smaller projects usually is higher. But typically, I don't know, pick a project of like a brewery, you've got a brew pub and
well, let's say, I mean, from the advice we've gotten from a lot of people is you can't really be having a good crack at it at a commercial level. I mean, some people might disagree, and there's been some discussion topics on some of the groups that this show's created about, is it feasible to do a less than a 500 liter brew pub? A lot of people have come on the show and said differently, but I mean, the consensus seems to be, you know, let's say $500,000 to spend, or that's the budget to spend on
a
brew pub.
Yeah, that's a very low budget.
Yep.
So, but on a $500,000 budget, $1 million budget, yeah, it really depends. 1.5 to 2%. It just depends. We also get engaged in stages, so you might only want to engage a project manager on just help with the technical feasibility at the start and just make sure I get help me setting up a budget, help me setting up a program. Go and have a look at a few sites and just write me a quick report. It might be a couple of days' work, which is, I don't know, $2,500, $3,000. You know, there's certain ways to engage a project manager. But yeah, I would say like as a ballpark, anything between 1.5% and 4% is typically what you would pay a project manager. Yeah, $500,000 though
I guess there's people from all walks of life listening to this, have different ideas on what size they want to go with and what aspirations they want to do in terms of how big they want to go. So, yeah, I guess that just seems to be the consensus anywhere. I mean, between $500,000 to $1 million seems to be, if you wanting to give yourself that peace of mind that in the first 12 months you've got a bit of buffer to sort of get you by. And so, yeah, no, it's always good to get. It's always hard because every brewery project and every type of concept that someone has in mind is going to vary greatly. So I imagine that you can't put exact figures on it, but it's always good to give people an understanding. But I can already see, like I've had a lot of other people on the show where that their services, someone can easily go out and do that themselves. But, and maybe I underline that word easily, a lot of people can sort of say, well, I can go and build my own house, but what experience and do they have in doing that? And will it take them three times as long to do it? Will they make some costly mistakes down the track? And listen, I've heard a lot of stories of people, you know, in their brewery builds make a lot of costly mistakes, take a lot longer to open up. And it just sounds like if you engage professionals and experienced consultants like yourself from the very beginning, yes, it's a bit of money out the door in the beginning, but it seems like a longer term investment, and you're going to be able to open up sooner rather than later and access those sales.
I look at that this way. I mean, it's probably one of the biggest investment you make in your life, maybe apart from buying your own house, but it's the biggest investment, which comes with a big risk, because I would guess for most brewers who start, that the house is a bit depending on the success of the brewery. So if you look at that, it's just like it's like a kick-ass investment. So you want to make sure it's delivered right. And that's where project managers will engage for, is just making sure it will it is done right. With having a project manager on board, you've got someone who is accountable for the project outcome. So they will help you and guide you through the project and just pull all the strings, have a very holistic view, and just know what needs to happen in which stage and what is important right now. Because for me to think about like my wallpaper color at the start of the project is, it's not relevant.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to tick a few big boxes first. Do I have enough power? Do I have enough, you know, my wastewater can actually drain on wastewater. Is that all sufficient? Like, how does that work? Can I get my equipment on site? And so there's a few boxes to be ticked before I look into certain things. And that's where like a project manager comes in and helps in doing that. As many other consultants look at their field and just doing that and giving advice in something specific, I think a project manager stands out a little bit because somehow you need to have an understanding of everything a little bit. Like, we don't do without experts. That's not what I'm trying to say, but at least we pride ourselves in having that understanding of a project and having a deeper understanding of every phase and having a good understanding of the application, development application process and legal licensing, et cetera, so that we can give some advice on, okay, you got to make sure that you apply for a liquor license at the right time. Yeah. You only got a certain limit when you can apply for your liquor license in relation to your DA application and approval, et cetera. So these kind of things is where we come in handy. And just when we develop a program, we make sure it works. So you pay, and if you pick a number, I don't know, $40,000-$50,000 on a, let's say, I don't know, $1 million, $2 million project, it might sound like a lot of money, but usually that is paid off within like no time, because yep. What you need to look at it as well is like, if you open your brewery or your brew pub, let's say a month later, I don't know what your predicted turnover is, but if you predict a turnover is $100,000 a month, you can count the numbers and you've suddenly open up 2-3 months later.
Exactly. And that's the main aim, is to open as soon as you can so you can start generating sales and demand and scaling the business. And Ben from CPS Planning is a great example. Is like, a lot of people try to navigate the DA and council process on their own, and there's been many stories, and we've even spoken offline about people that you've been engaged with that have spent tens of thousands, even upwards of up close to 100,000 on consultant reports, might be traffic management engineers or acoustic or storm water consultants or whatever. And if you were to engage an expert that can help navigate that, pull some strings, bypass things, you know, you could save yourself some money in the long run and also peace of mind. And I think the experience can be a little bit more enjoyable for you as well.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing. And Ben is right. Like with you know, doing a development application yourself is not impossible, but I personally wouldn't do it. And I've dealt with a lot. It's just like there's too many pitfalls. And again, having an expert on board, it will just pay off. And again, like as you said, there's so many reports you might need, and the town planner can give you a good idea of, do I need a traffic management report? Do I need a flood management plan? Do I need a waste management plan? Do I need, you know, there's so many plans council might ask for. But then again, it's like you would sit down with the project manager and the planner, you would define exactly, okay, what do I need? Because I can have a traffic management plan or I can have a traffic management plan. You know, there's different ways. If you go to consult and just say, hey, I need a traffic management plan. Okay, what do I get? Does it cover everything or capture everything I need to have captured for my development application? But again, that's where project managers can come in handy and just, you know, deal with that and just make sure, again, brief the consultant to just make sure it just captures the right scope.
Yeah, perfect. Now, Benedict, you've got do you mind me referring you as Ben?
That's fine, mate. Yeah.
Normally people refer to you as
Ben? It's Ben, Benedict, yeah.
You don't have
both works. I listen to both.
You've got a background in architecture, you mentioned earlier, and can you talk to us a bit about the topic in relation to a brewery, particularly in bar and tap room fit outs? We've talked about how some breweries just jump straight into it, and you've got, you know, you're sitting on milk crates and it's this very rustic industrial type. And I guess talk to us a bit about the brewpar microbrewery experience that someone properly putting eyes on from an architectural and design point can give a brewery.
Yeah, it's probably not just brewery or brew pub. It's generally like a hospitality thing is, and the focus is always very much on the design. So design from a couple of different perspectives is functionality and just making sure it is done the right way. So again, getting the right architect who understands how does back of house works with front of house, and making sure that the ways staff have to go to pick stuff up from back of house is not interfering with like how guests run to the bathroom, whatever, like these kind of things. It's like, so functionality is a big thing. The other thing is just interior design. You want to create an atmosphere. You might be the first brewery in a certain area, and you might get away with milk crates, and you might have a full house. That's up to the point where if you then have your next door neighbor opening a brewery, same product, great beer, but a nicer atmosphere, a lot of people will actually move over. So the other thing is you want to think about, do you want to have a food offering, which it's just another stream of revenue, but it's also just keeping people longer in there. But it comes with more complexities, and just getting a kitchen installed and kitchen design. It's just like kitchen exhaust and everything. There's a whole things to consider, and a kitchen is not cheap. So you want to be careful about that. But that's just something where you want to consider, do I want to have a kitchen? Do I want to have a food truck? Do I want to have a kitchen container or something like that? So that's just some things you need to think about. But if you look at like, and I won't name any breweries or brew pubs, but if you walk around on a Friday night in Merrickville and you go to different breweries, you see some spaces are just a few people in there, some are a bit more. And then there's a couple of places which is like, whenever you go there, there's always heaps of people. And if you look at like what they do, they, in the first kind of impressions, they do the same thing. They sell beer and maybe pizza or some other kind of like food. But what makes a difference? And the difference makes the atmosphere. So what do they do different? So if you go into a wide open space and just picking like milk crates or whatever again, and then you go into like an area where it's kind of like a cozy, nice, warm atmosphere. Lighting is a big thing in hospitality. You just feel like, I like it here. It's more like a pub. Yeah? And that's the thing, like if, and that's the challenges you have as I think architects have to deal with is, and you as a brewery owner or a pub owner, it's like when you open your brewery in a big warehouse, you've got a huge open space. And to create atmosphere, usually what you try to do is just bring down the ceiling and just have that, again, this kind of cozy feeling. That's what people tend to like. It's just, you know, not necessarily that warehouse style. So your interior design and your lighting is really, really important. So to get the right interior design on board who got that hospitality understanding and like how spaces work and how guest flow works is really important. If your primary focus is beer, and that's what most people would probably come from, is just being home brewers, to then having a brewery is like getting excited about all these shiny stainless steel tanks, which, yeah, might look sexy, but it's nothing which necessarily drags people in. Because every brewery now has it. You go in and you also get a glimpse of the brewery, which is kind of like, it's nice, but it's kind of, you know, it doesn't set you apart from anyone else. So you need to think about is what is unique about my business and my place? Why do people want to come to my place? And yeah, there's some great examples out there, and there's some really bad examples. Here, the Northern Beaches in Brookwell as well. And I wanted to take you to one bad example today. And again, I won't say the name. And what we just realized that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're not open. So
yeah, well, yeah, fortunately, we're not going there because now you said that. They were like, oh, they showed up this afternoon. Well,
I think it's kind of like there's a couple of breweries next to each other, which are fairly, fairly close to each other, which I think I would just pick as a good example of someone having it done it right and someone who I think has room for improvement. And it's just like, you can just tell and just do that maybe. And just do that. If you are an aspiring pub brewery owner, spend an evening in Merrickville, go to Brookwell or any other area. We've got a few breweries or pubs, and just go around and see what do they make different and where do I have most of the people and what is a popular spot, and just try to figure out what is it. And mostly it's the atmosphere. You need to have a good product. But just the baseline is like, and I haven't had any brewery where I went to in any of these areas where I would say, well, the beer wasn't good. So I was always like, yeah, I can drink, and some places I like better, but that's not what just keep me away from it. You know, I've been to some of the places again, but there are some places where I just want to spend more time. And I don't even know I want to spend more time. I just simply spend more time because I just I feel it's right.
Well, that's where a brewery or a brew pub is going to get most of its margins from, is people come in and dining in and beer over the counter, yeah, you know, the tap room sales. So people are coming in and you're giving like a takeaway offer, and yeah, you might have good beer, but they're going to take a 4-pack or a 6-pack and then drink it at home. I mean, yeah, you know, the whole reason someone builds a brewery is if they just wanted to brew beer, then, you know, maybe consider it just becoming a production brewer or just stay as a home brewer. But, you know, you want to create, like myself particularly, I want to create a nice atmosphere that's engaging, attractive for people to come and drink, bring their friends, have birthdays out. And even I've talked about it on the show, a sort of a musical element as well, having some live bands.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, here in Sydney, we're just a bit restricted with live music, and there's just a whole lot of restrictions around that kind of stuff. But if you look at like places or breweries these days, there's some good examples where it's kind of like a family-friendly place. You've got an outdoor area. It might be dog-friendly. It's got a food truck in the back. It might offer some gaming. So Bucketies, for example, here in Brookwell opened about 4 weeks ago or maybe 6 weeks ago. And we've got a pool table and we've got some darts and some other stuff. And it's just like a new thing here at the Northern Beaches. The other breweries don't have that. So, and the feedback, and I've been there a couple of times and I really enjoyed myself and playing a round of dart and having a good beer. And that's what the feedback I'm getting from friends as well is, like, they've been to that place and everyone speaks about it at the moment.
Yeah,
so it's just something you just got to think about it. Is it the right thing for me? Is it what I want? Is it the right thing for the area? It might be not the right thing for the area. If you live in an area where there's hardly any families, then probably your focus doesn't need to be family friendly. But it's just these aspects you want to consider, and that's where, again, like architects, interior designers come in and can help you to just like understand what will work best for me, and do that. Yeah, but the design part is a very, very important, very important part in making sure that your project is commercially viable. And but again, that's where we as project managers come in, and that's where a lot of architects or interior designers that are probably not that happy about is we are less focused on design. We also focus on budget, or we're trying to find the balance. And so we look at and that's the other thing. Designers sometimes go crazy and say, we could do this and that. Yeah, it could all do all of that. But you spend another $500,000. Then you as a client need to do the numbers and say, okay, do I still get my return on investment on that? If yes, then yeah, do it. If not, then we can't do it. But then it's the art then, I think, is to find the balance between that great design and your budget. And that's where experienced project managers, and then especially in hospitality, can come in handy and say, okay, why don't we value engineer it? Why don't we do, you know, a little bit of that, but we do that fully blown scope of that and just less here, and can help like navigate through that and just help like, okay, look at that from a different angle. And I've just recently worked on this project. We've done that to save some money. And that's the other thing, is just back to the point where you said like, okay, if I get a project manager on board, it only costs me money. That's a good example of where an experienced one can actually come in and save you. And usually, like, if your fee is 50K, but you save the client $300,000, and I mean,
money well spent. Yeah. Yep.
So
no, I'm definitely seeing the benefits of not just a project manager, but there's been many other things on the show where you just think, yeah, it's money up front and that's all people see, but you see the long-term benefit and the time saved and the costly mistakes that you could avoid. You're probably better off going down using that consultant. So, well, thanks again for your time, Ben. It's so much to go over, and we could probably spend another good hour talking about all the intricacies of what it takes to manage a successful brewery project. But coming towards the end of our chat, I always like to get a guest to part ways with some closing thoughts and advice. And I guess maybe if you can lean it towards those that are listening that probably thinking, you know what, having a project manager on board sounds great, but I don't think it's in my budget. I think I'll just go ahead and try to manage it on my own, see how I go. If for those people, what sort of advice would you part ways with? And is there anything that you can sort of let them know about, any particular tools of the industry that you've come to know that could help them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the biggest advice or most valuable advice I can give is just be prepared. Just be think ahead of what's happening. Think ahead of like, okay, you know what you want to achieve, but think about all the steps happening in between and what needs to happen by when. So having a program and a milestone program or milestones is very important so that you know if you want to lodge your DA, and let's say you do it yourself, you want to lodge it in 2 weeks' time. Is that going to be enough time for me to prepare everything? So just have that. Be realistic about that. So have a realistic program in place, but when do you want to achieve what? And be clear about what are the consequences if I do not open by that time. If your financing is based or relying on I need to open by the 1st of November, then you got to make sure, and you want to make sure you do open on the 1st of November. If you slip by 4 weeks, it might be a big problem. So be prepared is one thing. The other thing is just, it's the same categories, but have a budget, have a realistic budget. Just don't just pick a number and think I can make it work for that. There's so many different things on a project which you have to factor in terms of costs, which are important, and have a realistic budget and stick to your budget. And within your budget, you need to have a contingency. And the way we usually start a project, or we try to convince clients to start a project, is like, at the start, you would have a higher contingency, which decreases as you go with the project because more and more risks are ticked off. And then you can reduce your contingency. But as a brewery, it's most likely it's not going to be a new build. So it's going to be a fit out. Fit outs come along with certain things, because if you do a new build, it's a custom built thing. A fit out, you need to fit in what you want to fit in. And there are some latent conditions which you're not sure about. So you might have to strengthen the slab, which you weren't aware of, or whatever. The main switchboard, you didn't pick it up at the start, and or you thought it's still compliant, but it isn't. And these kind of things. So have a contingency and have a minimum of 10%. And that's just really, and if you don't use professionals, I would actually go higher and say, let's start with 20 or 30%. It might sound really high and everyone's shit. If I've got $1 million budget, that's another $300,000. But the truth is, if you do it yourself, there's a good chance that you will encounter some things. And I'm not saying you cannot resolve it, but again, dealing with these things will take time again. So bear that in mind, which will add time.
They're prone to more risk in making mistakes.
Yeah. So it's just. So, but the biggest advice is to be realistic about your program and your budget. In terms of tools to use, the biggest friend for budget is Excel. It's have a budget planner, and the way we set it up, we've got different categories for consultant fees and construction costs and other fees, and we can track costs and that's the way we do. And I suggest to do the same, just really have different categories. Just don't have it like all over the place. Just be mindful about what you need on a project and have it structured in a certain way, because that decreases your chance that you misses out on something. And do what you do. Just go out and speak to people who have done it before and just ask them, okay, what are the costs I need to allow for? And ask them if they can share their budget with them. And maybe if they're not willing to share their budget, maybe ask them at least to share like the different categories, like let them take the numbers out, but just get what they have spent money on. And then you can go through it and have a think about it. Do I need the same? And don't I need the same? And then put numbers against it. So the way we run budget is in projects, as soon as we hear about or can foresee a possible cost on a project, we plug it into the budget. And that might push it over budget, but at least it is tracked. And we can always work our way backwards. But the other thing is, what people do is they know about something which might be coming, but they're kind of like confident, oh, we can make it go away. And then these things might pile up. And then suddenly you realize you've got $100,000 of things which you thought would go away, but only $50,000 went away. And you're left with 50K, but it's not considered in the budget. So the way we do it is just everything you know about, just put it into your budget plan. But put it in as a future forecast cost or an estimate or something. Yeah. So the other thing is, like, the way we track costs is we've got a certain column in our Excel sheet. It's not rocket science, but it's just like some word of advice is just put next to it, whether it's an estimate, it's a quote, or it's a contract. If it's a contract, that's locked away. That's your cost. There might be variations, but you know it's a pretty certain cost. If it's an estimate, it's a high risk. If it's a quote, it's pretty good because it's based on something. But until you have signed that person up, it's not locked in. So just do that. I think, and then in terms of programming, a lot of people, like there's programs out there like MS Project to do programs, but they're a bit tricky. A lot of people use Excel as well for that. And it's the same principle as a budget planner. You put the different tasks in there. You start with like your feasibility study, your concept design, your detailed design. You put in your DA, and your DA might sit 6 months with council. So put that in as 6 months. And then the way it is done is and just Google what a Gantt chart is. But a Gantt chart is literally shows different bars with different tasks, and they're all related to each other. And certain things, for example, you can't do. You can't start on site without having a construction certificate. You can't get a construction certificate before you got your DA. So when you do a Gantt chart, make sure it's in a chronological order, or you do your program in Excel. Just put it all underneath. And then to your right, just pick the different cells and say one cell is maybe 1 week or 1 month, 1 day, whatever you want to pick. Color these cells. And that's a simple way to do it. But everyone got Excel. So just do that and just put that underneath. And then because what it does is it visualizes your program. Yeah. So, and I think that's very important. Just have it on one page or two page, or have that Gantt chart, different bars, so we understand what action or what is triggered by what. That's the other important thing. Mm. So I think, yeah, if you would want to do it yourself, I think program and budget are the two key things I want to make sure I track really well. And I've got a realistic target or realistic budget and program right from the start, which is heavily important if you get external investors on board, because if you suddenly run behind program or over budget, it's their investment is not what they thought it would be, and they're literally losing money. And depending on what model you have with your investors, they probably just have a few serious words with you and trying to get you back on track. But yeah, it's budget and program are the two key things I think I would pay attention to.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks again, Ben, for, I guess, sharing all that. And once again, there's a lot to consider. And, you know, maybe there's a lot of listeners out there, myself included, who are sort of weighing up the options of when they eventually plan to pull the trigger on some serious steps towards building their brewery, that they have a chat with someone like yourself. And I'm sure you can give them some sort of, I guess, a 20-minute phone call advice about how they can sort of, you know, weigh up their options and what you can deliver for them. So, yeah, if someone is interested in getting in touch, how do they do that?
Yeah, no, absolutely, as you said, we're always happy to have a chat. And, you know, the outcome of the chat might be that we both agree, no, you don't need a project manager, or maybe a different project manager or whatever. So always happy to have a chat, just free of charge, really. It's not a big deal. Get in touch with me. Easiest way is jump on our website, which is www.bskprojects.com.au, or send me an email at benedict@bskprojects.com.au. I better spell that because it's the German way. It's benedict@bskprojects.com.au. Yeah, just flick me an email. It goes straight into my inbox. And yeah, I'm usually very quick in responding. Always happy to have a chat. If you're in Sydney, happy to catch up and just have a chat and just give you a bit of advice. That's absolutely fine. And more than happy to help out.
Perfect. All right. Well, everyone, that was Benedict from BSK Projects. Thanks for coming on the podcast, mate.
Right. Thanks for having me. It was exciting, and thanks very much, and best of luck with your endeavor.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows when it happens, but I'm learning a lot. But anyway, once again, thanks for coming on, mate.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. I hope you all enjoyed that episode on brewery project management. Our next episode and our final episode of the series, I chat with General Manager of the Independent Brewers Association, Kylie Lethbridge, to discuss their role in the independent craft beer industry and the benefits of a brewery becoming a member of the IBA Association. As always, if you are liking the podcast so far and find the content useful, please give us a follow and rating on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on all our social media handles, as well as visiting our website, www.buildmeabrewery.com.au. I will also mention to listeners that we now have a new Build Me a Brewery discussion group linked to our Facebook page. This is a group of keen listeners and like-minded people discussing their brewery build plans and providing advice to others on the subject. Link to this group will be in the episode show notes, along with the brewery crawl event that is happening at the end of this month. That's all for now. I'm Chris Hayton, your host, and this is the Build Me a Brewery podcast.